Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at a decade of gasoline electric hybrid vehicles. Chris Schneider with us by phone today. Chris is the owner of Honda Motorworks of La Crosse. He bears the nickname the Hybrid Guru. Chris, you with us?
Good morning, Larry.
Good morning.
Great. Jim.
Yeah, Eric.
Eric.
Eric Powers with us as well, with me in the studio. He heads the Madison Hybrid Group, which holds Hybrid Fest, Green Drive Expo. It's the third weekend in July in Madison, always very well attended. And Eric, great to have you with us.
Thanks so much for having me. Good to hear you here, Chris.
Good morning, Eric.
Well, I'll tell you what, we can talk about there's some interesting history, I think, associated with this, and we'll certainly talk about the background of it and answer your questions. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. And, Chris, you had some festivities in La Crosse commemorating 10 years of hybrid technology. And Eric was a special guest.
He certainly was, and we were glad to have him involved. The movement that he has started there in Madison is just awesome, and we're glad that he's involved. We also had special guests from the Milwaukee area, Bradley Fons, and his son Justin, who happens to be a student here at UWL, University of Wisconsin La Crosse, and they also have done great things for the hybrid movement here in Wisconsin, and we're proud to be a part of it.
Well, I know, Eric, you spoke about sort of the progression of hybrid awareness. There's some awareness out there. Probably more work needs to be done yet.
Definitely still more work to be done. It's interesting that when I became involved in the movement probably about 8 years ago with hybrids, you know, some of the same questions I received then I still receive today. And in fact, I was answering some messages online this morning on one of the sites, again, asking about batteries, which I think Chris will attest to is still the number one question when it comes to batteries. Here we are 10 years after they've been introduced, you know, with the Honda Insight being the first one here 10 years ago.
Well, it's really great to have you with us. The Honda Insight, wasn't it, Chris, the first to be introduced, and it really kind of changed the landscape of the automotive world.
I think that it did, Larry, and Eric is an owner and driver of the first generation Honda Insight, and I'm sure he's got his own perspective on that car. But, you know, when I think about when the Insight was introduced, I have to take myself back 10 years ago, and of course, in December of 99, the whole country was concerned about the Y2K scare and the fact that computers might not be able to operate the way that we would expect them to. And, of course, when I think about that, it seems like it was a very long time ago.
Yeah.
I also have to think about a wonderful piece of lyrics from Pink Floyd, kicking around on a piece of ground in your hometown, waiting for someone or something to show you the way. And then one day you find 10 years have got behind you. No one told you when to run. You missed the starting gun. And I think about that song, and I'm here in my hometown kicking around and talking about hybrids for 10 years. And the fact that there are, as Eric mentioned, people who are still asking those same questions that many of the informed people that were asking 10 years ago. And it seems like not enough has been done, and from that standpoint, it's slightly disappointing looking back over the 10 years, but it's because of the tremendous rapid growth in the movement during most of the last 10 years, with the exception of the last year and a half,
yeah,
that we tend to overlook when we think back 10 years and hybrids being introduced, because the movement has been very strong, and it's grown significantly, and people who have had the experience of owning a hybrid know the wonderful benefits of fuel efficiency, environmental sensitivity, and reducing our dependency on foreign oil.
Yeah, my wife and I purchased a 2010 Prius this year, Toyota Prius.
Awesome.
And love it. It's about, normal driving, about 55 miles to the gallon.
Did you say 55 miles per gallon, Larry?
Yeah, that's just kind of normal driving.
And let me guess, you were getting 55 in your previous vehicle.
You're getting about 15.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it seems like forever when we between stops at the gas station. It's really been a real treat, and we can sometimes drive to work, and the motor may turn on just at the start, but where it's in town driving all the way and run the whole way, and it's you don't use any gasoline or almost none. You're over 100 miles to the gallon just going back and forth to work.
You only tripled your mileage.
Well, Fred in Green Bay has a question for you guys, so let's go to Fred. Hi, Fred. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to share another perspective. I'm a blind citizen of the state, and the Toyota Prius is a good example. The problem with these cars is you cannot hear them when they come up the intersections. Larry, you were just mentioning the fact that they're running on batteries and the motor doesn't kick in. That's fine, but you cannot hear them when they approach intersections, which makes it very difficult to detect their presence. A solution I would recommend for the whole industry would be put some rumble strips on intersections. It wouldn't be that big a deal, and you wouldn't have to change the whole industry. Otherwise, you're going to have to do something so that those of us who depend on auditory cues can function safely in the presence of these automobiles.
You know, my wife has brought that up, too, a few times, where she's driving and, you know, there's somebody on the sidewalk or going to cross the street or something, and she's really got to be a little careful. What do you think, Chris?
Well, I think it's a genuine concern, and I think that what I would like to do is to ask Fred if he would be willing, or if he knows someone who would be willing to participate in perhaps a grant could be written to be able to study this challenge and determine the best way to resolve it. There are lots of times where we've talked in the past about having the vehicles making some kind of noise. I know the first time that I visited the Honda plant in 1991, they had electric vehicles, guided electric vehicles, instead of forklifts. And so they were concerned about the same issue. I happened to be there shortly after Christmas time, and the vehicles would still be playing Christmas carols as they were traveling around the facility. And so if Fred would be willing to leave his phone number, I would love to communicate with him and find out the best way for us to try to resolve this in the future.
Oh, Fred, would you be willing to do that?
Yes, I'd be willing to do that.
Sure. Okay.
And the other thing, what do you think about my idea of the rumble strips?
You know, that's a neat idea because, you know, the cars still do make suspension noises and tire noises, certainly a lot less noise than the engines that most vehicles have. Rumble strips could be a very interesting way to possibly accomplish that mission.
Fred, I tell you what, we'll put you on hold. Jim Packard will get your number, and he will forward that on to Chris. Stay with us. Thank you. And turn to some other callers here. Ned in Millville, you're up. Thank you for calling.
Hello, Larry. I have a couple questions. First of all, I've kind of followed the hybrid technology for several years here since that first Honda Insight, and I had heard some statistics along the way that the first Honda Insight, as far as from an emissions in, emissions out standpoint, the first Honda Insight would never recoup the emissions created in the battery making process in the fuel economy life of that vehicle. And my second question would be, along those lines, undoubtedly the hybrid vehicle helps out the personal, I mean, the owner of the vehicle with fuel economy and the cost of fuel and that kind of thing. But as far as emissions go, has that improved over the last 10 years in the battery making? And can you still get ahead of the game as far as your emissions in, your emissions out? And then my last question was, what your guest spoke earlier about some questions that he's heard a lot over the years over speaking with the battery in regards to the batteries. Is there what are those questions that people keep coming up with?
All right, let's turn to Eric first. Eric Powers?
Yeah, I guess I'll start with the sort of the last question there first, asking a bit about, you know, what sort of questions we hear about the battery. Probably the number one question I hear about the battery is, you know, what? Well, how long do they last? And I hear people, you know, with incorrect information saying, you know, geez, they cost, you know, $9,000 and you need to replace them every 2 years. Or now I hear they're $5,000 and you replace them every 5 years. Or, you know, it's sort of all over. But it tends to be along those lines, sort of misinformation they have out there. And the reality is that the batteries, you know, tend to last as long as most people tend to keep their cars. Maybe not me, but I tend to keep mine until they rust apart. But that said,
now, Eric, you know your car, your Insight will never rust apart with that
right.
aluminum
body. That's going to be the problem. My current car has an aluminum body, and so it'll be interesting to see what happens. But, you know, right now, I mean, I have a relative of mine who has a Honda Insight with 225,000 miles that has never replaced a battery. But I also know people who have had other vehicles that have had to replace them at 100,000 miles while it was still under warranty. So that's really the questions I have the most. The question I answer regarding batteries today now, and I think we'll start to see this now, that some of those start to come out of warranty at 10 years, which 10 years is a pretty long warranty for any piece of equipment on your car, for that matter. But is, you know, whether or not what the cost is going to be for that replacement. And, you know, there's all sorts of varying. Whether you go to a dealer and have it done, that's going to be a certain cost. Or if you replace it yourself, which, you know, requires some expertise but can be done, you know, that's another cost. And if you're replacing it yourself, today I looked up and saw two places on the internet of reputable people that I know that you can get them replaced for under $1,500 installed.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, for a battery. And so I guess if I made it to 150,000 miles, which is what my battery's warranted to, and at, you know, 180, suddenly I had to buy a battery for $1,500, I wouldn't like it, but I think I might expect that after 10 years and 150,000 miles. So I guess that's sort of the long answer to the question about the questions I hear about batteries, which is the number one question.
What about emissions?
Well, that was a good point that Ned made, comparing the emissions benefits and versus the construction of the batteries. And the thing that I would say to that, Larry, is that most of those analysis that I saw several years ago about that very issue was suggesting that the batteries had to be replaced every 100,000 miles.
Right.
And they were confusing the warranty. Originally, the Toyota warranty was 8 years, 100,000 miles. And since it became the media darling, most people were focused on that warranty. As Eric mentioned, the original hybrid, the Honda Insight, eventually they extended the warranty to 10 years, 150,000, which is the greatest warranty on any automotive components in the marketplace. So that analysis was really not correct. Now, there is environmental impact created by those batteries, but that's why it's important to discuss the life and then also what happens to them at the end of the vehicle, because those batteries do go into recycling programs, and there's no reason to have that nickel not get recycled, and that's what does happen. I think Eric would be the first one to say that if you were going to buy new batteries and you weren't returning a core, so the old batteries that were no longer functioning well, there's additional charge to buying the batteries themselves through the manufacturers. They want to make sure that those batteries are taken care of appropriately. And then the final thing that I'd like to make a point on is that with the Honda hybrid system, as simple as it is, you can, and I know people who have driven their Honda Insights after the batteries have failed.
Mm-hmm.
We have more than six people here in the La Crosse area with over 200,000 miles on their original batteries. And at Hybrid Fest, not last year, but the previous year, I shook hands with someone who had 400,000 miles on their original batteries. So the battery lives are great. They're very well proven. They receive Consumer Reports' very finest rating. So failure rates of less than 2%. But even with a battery failure in the Honda system, you can still drive the vehicle. It's not going to be quite as efficient. Eric, what are you getting in your insight?
Well, usually I get about 60 or so right now. So
you might be 10% less effective if you didn't have your batteries in your vehicle. And so I have a gentleman at 228,000 miles, his batteries failed. He drove it for a year, and he was getting 58 miles per gallon with his vehicles with the batteries not operational. And so, if you're again, if you're not getting 58 miles per gallon, you might want to consider a Honda hybrid with batteries that are not fully operational.
Chris Schneider and Eric Powers, our guests today, as we talk with them about hybrid vehicles. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with Chris Schneider of Honda Motor Works of La Crosse and Eric Powers, who heads the Madison Hybrid Group, which holds Hybrid Fest Green Drive Expo the third weekend in July. So glad to have them along as we talk hybrid vehicles. I think we answered Ned's questions for the most part there. So we'll move on to Ben in Oconomowoc. Ben, hi to you.
Hello. I have a home-built electric car that I made myself from almost entirely recycled parts in my garage. I know that Eric's familiar with it because I actually jump-started his Honda Insight from my car one time. I've never seen a car jump-start so fast in my life. It was absolutely amazing. But one thing that I'd like to add to the conversation is that on electric vehicles, you can get electricity from the wall, which can come from renewable energy. Like at my house, I'm on a renewable energy plan, so all my electricity comes from sources such as wind power. And I charge up at night, and that's when there's plenty of wind power available, and people are using less electricity, so it's a great use of that renewable energy. So if hybrids had a plug on them and they could get some energy from their wall, they would be just a whole lot more efficient. You'd be able to have a vehicle that would get over 100 miles per gallon. And I know there's going to be some commercially available vehicles coming from Chevy and Toyota. And I would like to have the guys talk about those vehicles a little bit and how they're even that much better than the existing hybrid cars that are out there right now.
All right. Well let's turn to Eric first. Eric?
Yeah, well, Ben, good to hear from you, and yeah, thanks for that jump start. appreciated that. Yeah, there are some vehicles coming out: Chevy, the Volt, Nissan's will have the Leaf, which is an electric vehicle, and the Toyota's also looking at having plug-in vehicles as well, plug-in hybrids actually. And in fact, I have actually currently converted my Honda Insight to a plug-in vehicle as well, so I can plug mine in to the wall same way you can, Ben. And so it does use some electricity to offset some of the gasoline usage I have. In my own opinion, I think that is sort of going to be the next progression. I don't think most people at this point can sort of picture themselves moving directly from driving gas vehicles to driving straight electric vehicles. They can't picture themselves doing that, although I think that would fit a lot of people's needs. And so I think we're going to have this time where we're going to have plug-in hybrid electric vehicles where you're going to have this hybrid technology in your vehicle. You're going to get really good gas mileage, maybe 50s or whatever it might be. But you'll also have this ability to plug it in and drive on the electric. And during that period, when you're using the electric, you'll be able to get really infinite gas mileage from that perspective. And then I think maybe over time, what we'll see maybe in the next 10 years, people will be like, wait a minute, why am I carrying around these two drivetrains? Gosh, most of the time I'm just driving around Madison. It's less than 30 miles or 40 miles or whatever the battery range is. I'll just have my sort of electric car for driving around town. And then I'll maybe have another vehicle, long-range maybe battery vehicle or hybrid electric vehicle for maybe those other long-distance commutes. So I agree. It's a great idea to be able to plug your vehicle in. And if we can get people moving towards that, that's another way to offset your gasoline usage.
And just to add to that, John from Milwaukee emailed us and said, what they're saying about the Chevy Volt is true. It'll have a 16 kilowatt hour battery, and they will only allow it to use 50% or 8 kilowatt hours before the engine kicks in. They also say on a full charge, It will provide about 40 miles of travel mm-hmm. from the 8 kilowatt hours. He went on to say today electricity sells for about 12 cents per kilowatt hour. So 8 kilowatt hours cost is about 96 cents for 40 miles. That's about 2 cents a mile for fuel. If you charge at night, it's half the price, so it's about a cent. And if you have a standard hybrid that gets 50 miles per gallon, gas sells at, let's say, 250 per gallon, that's about 5 cents per mile. So standard hybrids are getting about 5 cents per mile for fuel. So that means that when plugged in, hybrids are driven just on electricity. The cost per mile for fuel is about 40% that of a standard hybrid, 20% if the electricity is brought in at half price in the evening.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see, you know, again, this idea where people start realizing using electricity can be certainly less costly. It can be, if it's from renewable sources, much more clean. And, you know, I think it'll just take a bit for most people to make that leap to driving electric vehicles. With the Chevy Volt, with that one, the way it's set up is the gas engine never really drives the wheels. And that the electric motor is what's driving the wheels, and the battery's sort of, you know, giving it the power. The little motor in the back is providing juice for the battery. It's recharging the battery. It's not really driving the wheels in that sense.
He was wondering if the plug-in hybrids allow users to use the car to provide 110-volt AC power for camping or during an emergency.
That's a whole nother, you know, we could have a whole show about that, about not only to have the vehicles to grid, so having the vehicles provide power back to the grid when needed. You can think of that about that maybe on a hot day, for example. You know, you've got your car already charged up in the night, and it's just sitting in your parking lot at work, and you are only going to go a couple miles at the end of the day to get back home. Maybe during the day, it might be a way, if you've allowed the power company to do that, to sort of give back to the grid when it's needed.
Any comment, Chris?
Pun intended. I've been driving a plug-in vehicle manufactured in Reedsburg, Wisconsin for 3 years now this December. Mm-hmm. They're called the Columbia Par Car. I've been driving a Summit model. But recently, I've been driving the Columbia Mega, their newest and most automotive-looking. It was about 14 months ago that I traveled to the Paris Auto Exposition and got to drive the Mitsubishi MiEV, which will also be another full electric coming out. So it's always a pleasure to have someone like Ben moving us in the right direction of full electric. He's a very progressive thinker and someone who's willing to do things with their vehicle that others may not yet. So it's always good to have those discussions, to have all kinds of people looking towards the future. Thank you, Ben.
Thanks very much for calling. Dave emailed us and said, I like and read about hybrids and e-cars, but I drive a Ford Aspire, non-hybrid, just simple 68-horsepower four-cylinder, and get 42 to 45 miles per gallon, except in winter. Why can't automakers make cars more efficient like they used to? Also, for your amusement, I'm 7'4" and fit in it well.
Car size, 7'4"?
Car size has nothing to do with interior room size, he says.
Wow, are you a basketball player, Dave?
Must be, but... All right, he's wondering why can't automakers make cars more efficient like they used to in terms of gas mileage?
That's a great question, Dave. And there's lots of examples through automotive history of very fuel-efficient gasoline-powered cars. And where I think that's a valid discussion, I think that when we take a look at our oil usage and the fact that nearly 70% of our oil is coming from foreign sources, many of those sources that are not friendly with the United States, moving towards alternatives is something that's really important from that standpoint. Obviously, using less oil like you are is beneficial, but if we could actually take ourselves 100% away from oil so that the oil could be used for the manufacture of plastics and other components in our lives, as well as some lubrication that oil does a very good job at, we can move towards electricity, but also we can move towards natural gas as I have been driving for my highway vehicle. And what I would really love to see in the near term is a compressed natural gas electric plug-in vehicle that would be able to take advantage of the technologies that Eric and Ben and I have been talking about on the electric side, but to reduce our dependency on foreign oil by using domestic natural gas.
Thank you, Ben, for calling. Appreciate it very much. And I want to turn to Sally in Wayland, Minnesota next. Sally, hi.
Hello, Chris and Ed. Hello to you. Hello to Larry and Jim. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I drive a big, dumb Chevy truck that I absolutely love. It's been a trusty steed. It has never let me down. But it's got like 250,000 miles on it, and I know it's not going to last forever. And I also know that the next vehicle I get will be a hybrid. My question is, what is on the horizon for trucks? I haul probably weekly, maybe a little more, and I like the security of four-wheel drive because I live out here in the middle of nowhere. So what's out there for you know,
sure,
trucks that can haul and four-wheel drive? And then also, I really love the fact that the people that are going to help me out and sell me my next vehicle are able to quote Pink Floyd.
Well, we'll start with you, Chris, the Pink Floyd person.
Well, thank you, Sally. I've got a quote from David Bowie here. it takes the 10 years and divides it into two 5-year periods. but I won't go into that now. As far as the Chevy truck replacement, where is Wayland? I'm going to assume, since I know Minnesota quite well, that you're out in a rural area, and that perhaps you don't have access to natural gas, because Chevy is coming out with some natural gas burning vehicles, I believe the Malibu, and then also a Chevy truck, and so that could be an alternative. If you have natural gas at your home, you could get a refueling appliance called Fill and refuel at your home. And when I refueled last month in Racine, I paid $1.159 for a gallon of gas equivalent. So if that would help you from an economy standpoint, that would be one option. But Chevy does produce or has produced a gasoline electric hybrid. And so there is a hybrid truck that's available for you. It's not as effective as we would like to have vehicles eventually. Full electric trucks could become extremely powerful and have four-wheel drive systems and have payloads equal to or greater than your Chevy truck today. But it's going to take people investing and voting with their pocketbooks to actually help the marketplace get there. And that's why, you know, people like Ben who are electrifying their cars and then being involved in a great program like this to make sure that the rest of the marketplace understands that electric motors are very powerful is a great tool to making that happen. So thank you very much for your great question and involvement, Sally. Eric, have you got something to add?
No, I think you're on the right track there there are hybrid trucks out there. The difference of those systems is they really focus more on just being able to shut off the vehicle at a stoplight to save gas, which certainly does save gas and reduces emissions. But it's not the same as, say, the Honda or the Toyota systems where they're systems where they're actually propelling the vehicle with that hybrid drive.
All right, there you have it. Thank you very much, Sally, for calling. Appreciate your call. And we'll take more calls here. Bob in Appleton up next. Bob, hello.
Hello. You just made reference to what I was interested in.
Oh,
natural gas. I don't want to get into it, but there was a report done about 30 years ago, and they checked to see how much natural gas we had in the country, and they come up with a report. The government did this. It was 1,001 years of natural gas, And by the time I got back to Washington and rewritten, we had a shortage of natural gas. And now lately, lo and behold, we've got 100 years of natural gas that just happened to come up magically from nowhere. But natural gas, you can heat towns. You can run every vehicle in the city of any small, well, 25,000, 50,000 people by simply taking the raw sewage, mixing it with rotable garbage, and you'll have more natural gas than you know what to do with. Huh? And you can fuel everything. In the state of California, all the city trucks go to the little sewage treatment plants they got or whatever. They go there and they gas up on with natural gas, and they run all the city vehicles with natural gas. So I can't see why we're, well, electric sounds good, but if we're worried about oil coming from other countries and what we're paying, natural gas done the sewage garbage way is the cheapest way to go, and we got plenty of sewage and we got plenty of garbage.
Well, Eric, what do you think?
Well, I think you're on the right track in that there isn't really, you know, one magic bullet out there. As much as I'm a proponent of hybrids, I also am a realist and realize that there's going to be lots of different people's needs out there, and there's going to take lots of different pieces to solve the problem. In fact, at Hybrid Fest, at Green Drive Expo, you know, that's really what we do is we talk about the fact that there's all these technologies. When we're there, we have people from who are there talking about biodiesel. We're there with people talking about public transportation, talking about bikes, talking about electric cars, talking about hydrogen, talking, you know, about all these different options, because we know that there's going to be not a single solution to sort of reduce our dependency on foreign oil.
Yeah,
I love the idea of renewable natural gas.
Absolutely.
Bob, thank you so much for bringing it up. Here in La Crosse, Gunderson Lutheran Medical Center recently purchased a Jenbacher engine that will convert the natural gas, well, the methane that City Brewing has been producing, and it will meet 8% of the needs of Gunderson Lutheran Medical Center. We've been burning that, flaring that off here in La Crosse for all of the decades that I can remember. And so we're starting to focus on how we can have that energy here in our communities working for us. Our landfill currently does the same thing, but landfills like Whittier, California, have for a decade been using their landfill gases to power all of the trucks that bring the landfill out to that community. And you're lucky, Bob, living in Appleton. We Energies has a commercial natural gas refueling system right there in Appleton, which I have used on many occasions to refuel my natural gas vehicle. Thanks for bringing Appleton and that solution into the equation here in our discussions.
Yeah, thanks, Bob, for calling. I want to give Nick in Chicago a chance. Nick, hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great, thank you for calling.
I was calling because I have a Jetta diesel, and I was wondering if we could get the best of both worlds by putting diesels into hybrids. Diesels already get 40% better, well, up to 40% better fuel economy than gas. And
all right,
be good.
All right, Eric.
Yeah, actually, you'll see. I think again, a lot of the different mixes, including diesel electric hybrids. If you look at what Mercedes is coming out with, and BMW, looking at some of those different options. The hybrid technology isn't limited only to gasoline engines. And so, yeah, you will see some of those certainly in the upcoming years. And, you know, we've gone 10 years not having one. Hopefully in the next 10, we'll see more of those.
Yeah. Thank you for calling, Nick. Appreciate it. And Carol in Cedar Grove, on to you now. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I was wondering, when will these be coming down in price so that an average person can buy one? Not that you have to be close to a millionaire to buy one of these convertible cars, because I'd love to have one of those just to go back and forth to the store. And when will they be also, when will they be like in the used car lots?
Well, I'm going to turn to Chris Schneider for that one.
Carol, in terms of price, there are hybrids available. The new Insight actually starts at $19,800, which is pretty competitive for a very fuel-efficient car and a car that has five passengers. In terms of just getting around your neighborhood, if you're going to the grocery store, and a full electric vehicle could be part of that. Now, if you're driving on streets of 35 miles an hour or less, and your community has passed an ordinance that allows neighborhood electric vehicles, you could be doing that in vehicles that start at about $9,000.
Wow.
In terms of used, we have had the largest selection of used hybrids in the country right here in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and can access that inventory on a website, hybridcarstore.com. And hybridcarstore.com also has natural gas vehicles inventory and a link to nevcarstore.com for neighborhood electric vehicles. Thanks for being concerned about the low price alternatives, and we appreciate you being involved in the conversation.
Thank you, Carol, for calling. Appreciate it. And Stella in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I don't remember the name of the caller, but there was a woman who called in who has a truck, and she was wondering about hybrid trucks.
Stally, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And my husband and I, we have both a 2002 Prius, and when Toyota came out with the Highlander Hybrid, we had been waiting for a hybrid truck. We have a Highlander Hybrid, which it's two-wheel drive. It is available in four-wheel drive. It pulls our boat better than our old Suburban did. It has a gasoline engine of about 180 horsepower, I believe, and the electric motor with the torque of it gives about 300 horsepower. So there's almost 500 horsepower when you need it for pulling and towing. We get 28 to 30 miles per gallon driving empty, and about 20, I think it is, 18 to 20 when we're towing.
And that's with which vehicle again?
That's a Toyota Highlander Hybrid, and it's tuned for performance rather than fuel economy. So we get much better fuel economy in the Prius than we do in the Highlander, but the Highlander pulls the boat better than the old Suburban did.
All right. Any concluding comment, Chris?
Great example of someone who is thinking about their needs and selecting the most fuel-efficient and environmentally friendly solution to meet those needs.
Perfect. And Eric, thank you so much for being with us. You've got a Hybrid Fest you're planning for California.
Yeah, that's right. We've done Hybrid Fest Green Drive Expo in Madison now. This year will be our fifth year, the third weekend in July. And then we've been talking now, and now it's come to fruition. We'll be doing another show just north of Berkeley in California. We'll be doing that in June, on June 12th. And the interesting part there is that'll be in an old converted Ford assembly plant.
Ah.
And they have like a megawatt of solar power on the roof right on the San Francisco Bay. So if people need a break and want to come out with their hybrids out to California, they can do that too.
It's great to have you guys with us. I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you both very much. Chris Schneider is the owner of Honda Motor Works of La Crosse. He's the hybrid guru. And Eric Powers heads the Madison Hybrid Group, which holds Hybrid Fest Green Drive Expo the third weekend in July in Madison. Really appreciate having them back. We'll have them on again, and we'll talk some more about hybrids. Coming up, though, we're going to take a look. We're going to go back to the business of antiques, talk about antiques, appraisals, and auctions with Shirley Bauman, auctioneer and certified appraiser out of Madison. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.